side, got a man open in the end zone. Stills grabs a touchdown. Kenny Stills, what a pair of hands.
Lehman showing blitz. There's a blitz.
Super job. You're a champion, undisputed.
All right,
champion.
Guys. Welcome to the Budberry Bob and Beers podcast. I'm your host tonight. That's the evening, right? Come here, Robian. I am joined by Stephen Brown. Stephen has life. You know, we talked about your injury on the podcast last week. How are you doing?
What did you guys even say about it? Were you just like, yeah, right, podcast,
we said that you attributed your injury all to podcasting, and I even wrote what your injury down was, like the horizontal or horizon or whatever, meniscus tear, one of the two.
Yeah, I got a horizontal tear in my lateral meniscus. That's the outside one in medical terms. But I'm good, walking again. Chilling, gotta take it easy, but it's a perfect time to do it with the holidays here.
Do you walk maybe like a peg leg would walk right now?
Yeah, pretty much.
Kind of like Lego man in it, kind of a little bit.
It's just really slow. Like I was walking through the grocery store and there's like old people passing me. I'm like, no way. There's just no way.
Yeah, it's important.
You're miserable, like, but we're just taking it one day at a time. Work our way back.
You know, that's all we can do. And we're gonna hope for no surgery. Because that would, you'd probably be in a wheelchair by then. But anyways, that voice, no joke. The other voice you heard, laughing at Steven's misery, because it's he just podcasts too hard. It's Trevor Rogers. Trevor, how are you doing?
No care. Exactly. Much, much better than Steven, I think, at this point. Not getting passed by old people in the grocery store. So I've got that going for me in my life, and I'm grateful for it. But my sincerest condolences to Steven's meniscus. We appreciate you laying it all out on the line.
The worst thing is, it's not even a good story. So when people ask you, like, how'd you get hurt? And I was like, I was just sitting in my room podcasting. And I mean, that was the end.
We got to figure out a good story, like somebody robbed a bank or you robbed a bank.
I tore my rotator cuff and my labrum my senior year in high school. And jeez.
That's not fun.
No, it sucked. And it was at our high school, right? It was the Norman North Norman High football game.
No, nice.
And yeah, and I did not play football in high school because I am barely 5'9" and just not an athlete that in any shape or form, really. But I was very involved in shenanigans in our student section. And
we love some good shenanigans.
I always told people like it's a football related injury, but the reality is that I was crowd surfing in the stadium. And yeah, they actually they played it at G Foms. I got dropped on a rail and dislocated my shoulder.
Holy God.
Yeah.
Just going too hard. Just going too hard as a fan. And, that's okay. Trevor is SEC ready as a fan, as we talked about a few weeks ago. But let's dive into a bunch of stuff. OU has a bowl game in a couple days. We're fresh off of Christmas just yesterday. New Year's, the next time we actually have a podcast will be after the New Year's as well. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, etc. All that stuff. Just pulled on recruiting, just right off the cuff. We find out actually today, Chris McClellan, Tulsa native, ends up going to Missouri. of all places. And we were talking about this before the podcast, that like that was rather odd because it seemed like a very foregone conclusion that he would be joining the Oklahoma Sooners for quite a while. And then next thing you know, it's like gets weird. And then all suddenly it's a Missouri thing, like randomly on Twitter. And also the SIP, Lane Kiffin, they are just completely cleaning up in the transfer portal. Anybody that's out there, they're going and getting it. And Oklahoma, I mean, it doesn't mean that they're not actively looking for the opportunities in the transfer portal, because they definitely are, but they're also, I feel like, going to be a lot more active after this coming Thursday. I think that's, I mean, they're preparing for a game. I would expect that. And so I'm really intrigued to get, I'm going to go to Steve. I'm going to go to your thoughts first. What the hell, first the Missouri, and then Oklahoma NIL. I don't think this is a situation, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, if that Oklahoma's NIL is not up to snuff, or is it just other programs are just have more built out ideas of this? Or is this again a Jeff Lebby situation where you're trying to shifting around guys that represent certain facets and whatever?
I mean, I think it's all the above. Jeff Lebby was a huge part of NIL, as we experienced with Caden Green there. But you look at maybe how like Missouri and Ole Miss are choosing to recruit, I guess you could say. Look at their recruiting classes. They're 11th and 12th in the SEC out of 15 or 16 teams. So it's clear that they put more of an emphasis on the portal and getting guys that, you know, maybe aren't superstars, but guys that can help you, that have experience, you know what they can do in the SEC. And then you look at Oklahoma, who's sitting at the fifth best class in the SEC. With all sorts of young talent. And I think there is some reason to this. I mean, if you hear it from anybody, you get more money when you go into the portal. Like that's just what it is, because when you go into the portal, people know more about you generally, for as far as like Chris McClellan.
Sure.
Whereas Oklahoma, they choose to spend their money more maybe the high school rank. So you're not spending clearly as much on high school players that haven't played a snap of college football generally. And you're getting more talent. So I think there's just two different strategies to this, and Oklahoma's choosing the high school route.
Trevor, what do you think about that? I know you have thoughts.
Yeah, I pretty much echo what Steve-O just said. Like, I think it's unfortunate kind of happenstance and coincidence, especially like Missouri. I know there's a lot of hand-wringing around like what's going on up in Columbia, and losing out to a former Big Eight rival and somebody that's on your schedule going forward. But you know, it's just philosophically different. Everybody's like, well, how come Missouri suddenly got all these resources and money? And you kind of look at it again, like, yeah, the recruiting class, this is one of the better recruiting classes that they've had in a long time. And you know, they're still, you know, fringe top 25 right there, sitting, you know, I think 24 in 247's composite. Yeah. You know, and so like that's not me taking a shot at Missouri's class. It's just kind of like where they've been as a program the last few years. And so, you know, you're on the losing end of the Williams, and I'm with me. You know who I'm talking about. Nwarney. I still can't pronounce his last name. Sorry guys. But like you're on the losing end of that. You lose Caden Green and then you lose Chris McClellan. It sucks. Like it's that you're going to win some and lose some, but then you look at like their overall recruiting class and you know, it's clear that, you know, programs like that, you know, and Missouri, I think you could say Missouri and Ole Miss are pretty comparable in terms of like resources and like the type of, you know, job that it really is. Building through the portal makes total sense, you know, have other programs develop. But to like Steven's point, if you don't have there's very few superstars that you see, you know, outside of like the Dylan Gabriels, kind of like the quarterback, you know, big quarterbacks that enter the portal, and then Trevor Etienne, there's only a couple of huge names that kind of come in and out of the portal every year. So you're building your roster on guys that fill holes that you know, I don't know. I'm curious to see like how long that experiment like goes on and how well it works. It worked pretty well for Ole Miss a year ago.
TCU,
you know, right. You know, it worked well for TCU. Like, I'm not saying like it worked for great for OU. Like OU had a great portal haul last year, but now they're going a different route. So I think it just kind of ebbs and flows. If you're not recruiting well at the high school level, you have to put your resources in. And it's not to say like Ole Miss or Missouri's recruiting poorly, but like in the SEC, you've got to find dudes somewhere. And so I guess this word salad of what I'm trying to say is it's an interesting experiment. I think it works out. I think it's going to work out in years. But just like we see, you know, recruiting classes at the high school level fail and bust, I think you're also going to see an inevitable transfer portal class kind of bust as well, because at some point you got to figure out, you know, do these guys, why did they leave their school in the first place? And are they as good as advertised when they get there? Do they mesh with your culture? Do they mesh with your what you need, you know, position wise? I don't know. It's an interesting perspective, but I guess like to my advice to other OU fans is like, quit with the hand wringing. You lost a few battles. Ole Miss is a more fascinating case study to me than Missouri. And OU's still pretty primed and set. I don't think Brent Venables is going to be, we got to go pull every guy every year to refill every hole. But the counterpoint to that and my concern, I guess, with Brent Venables, and I don't think this will be the case. You know, people have talked about, like, I think I've talked about, we've mentioned in the past, is Brent Venables a guy that is going to ride with his young guys? And we're just going to, like, trust and build up. And every 3-4 years, you've got a juggernaut, you know, of college football, kind of how it used to be. But the flip side of that is I look at Clemson and where Brent came from and the philosophy of Dabo Swinney. And one of Dabo's biggest criticisms last year was he failed to utilize the portal. And you see the worst Clemson product that Dabo's had since the pre-Brent Venables days. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see how that mantra plays out for Venables. It's a very, you know, like people are wondering, when's OU going to get that big guy? You know, are we going to fill all these holes? Maybe they're not. Maybe they're going to ride the young guys, and that's the philosophy going forward. And you hope it carries momentum.
It's kind of like, I mean, every team builds a roster differently. I'm really intrigued by how this is going to play out in the long run. Obviously, we've seen the short term. You've seen, obviously, Oklahoma be very successful, especially this past season with transfers. And like Steven mentioned, it's a good point to bring up that, like, you know, you're spending money on these transfers. You're not really spending money, a ton of money anyways, on these recruiting classes. And so they kind of even out at the end of the day, especially, you know, you have a 5-star kid, top 5 in the country. You're paying him maybe not as much as a guy right from the portal. So I don't know. It's an interesting experiment and something that I think Oklahoma kind of gets away from, but not ever really gets away from. This is something that every team is always going to use, and it will be on a needs basis. I mean, that's just the product of college football today. So as far as the product of college football today, though, Oklahoma, we talked about the signing class just briefly last week. Trevor, I'm going to come right back to you. We talked about this player just briefly before we hopped on. Maybe I think this is your guy. But from the signing class, who might be the hidden gem, or who is your hidden gem and why?
Yeah, and to be completely honest, listeners back home, I had to like go through the recruiting class again, and take like a quick doubt, because the big names are all the ones that come to mind that we talked about last week. You know, the Okoye, obviously, like the David Stone, the Taylor Tatums of the world, like
Jaden Jackson looks huge in pack practice. Exactly.
But one name that stood out to me that immediately, like when I went back and looked through, you know, the class that OU just signed, Michael Bogunowski, is a guy that I'm pretty excited about, and going back and watching, some of his tape, you know, from his junior highlight, junior year highlights. The dude is violent. He plays a very violent brand of football. And people may kill me for saying this, because the comparison really isn't fair. But he reminds me in a lot of ways of Jordan Evans when OU recruited him out of Norman North. And I'd say that's fun.
He's tall. He's like 6'2", right?
Yeah, he's tall. I think Boganowski's frame is already built out a little more mature than what Jordan Evans was. But I mean, in terms of like the athlete side of him, being able to be utilized on both sides of the ball, you look at the speed that this guy has, that to me is like, there's other things that are going to come along naturally because he has that natural athleticism there. And then on top of that, like I said, the dude likes to hit people. He has very, textbook form, knows how to wrap up, knows how to tackle. But physically, stout. That's a guy that I'm really excited to see kind of how he develops and if that body continues to build out and if he can kind of take that next step. His football IQ, if developing his football IQ, will be crucial because I like what I see from an athlete standpoint.
And Steven, what about you? Who might be your hidden gem if not Michael Boganowski?
I'll go with James Nesta because I've been just harping on him all class, but he's a guy that 6'5", 205, dual sport athlete. He's going to play baseball for Oklahoma. Could be actually pretty good for baseball. So we'll see how that might pan out a little bit. But James Nesta, kind of like Boganowski, just plays a very violent brand of football. I don't know exactly where he's going to fit in the defense. He could slide to linebacker. He could be more of an edge guy. They'll just kind of see how he develops, but rangy, long, fast, violent athlete. That's just at the point of attack. It just reminds me so much of from last year, like Samuel Omosigo and Lewis Carter and those kind of guys. It's just another guy that can play in that front seven just with a violent tendency. So I think he's what, maybe a three. It looks like maybe they bumped up to a little bit of a 4-star there, but for me, I think he's an absolute steal out of North Carolina.
That was going to be mine. I was going to say Nesta. The guy plays like an edge, but also upright as a linebacker, 6'5", 205. You know, you can put at least 20 more pounds in that frame. Heck, like I was thinking maybe he can be even used as a kind of inside the box cheetah like they used at Son McCullough, even a little bit there too. And so he's like you mentioned, I think he's a really big get that is just not talked about like at all for some reason. Yeah, like you said, off the coast in the Carolina, North Carolina, really big pickup. And so let's talk about the actual game though. Oklahoma 10-2 plays Arizona 9-3. Arizona is actually favored by 3 points. The over under, they expect these teams to score. The over under is 60.5. It is in the Alamo Dome, so you will not have to worry about any weather conditions. It is at 8:15 on ESPN. So couple storylines. Arizona is trying to win 10 games in a season for the fourth time ever, so that's kind of a big deal. There's a freshman quarterback duel in Jackson Arnold and Noah Fifita, who has 23 touchdowns and 5 interceptions based off of a 70% completion rate, but they throw a lot of screens, so that's kind of like, you know, what they do. He did replace the actual starter who's transferring this offseason. And Oklahoma is basically displaying an interesting mixture of what they have in 2024 and heading to the SEC, especially with the defense in particular, if we're being quite honest, with the exception of a few guys that are playing. So anyways, Arizona comes into this game pretty white hot, really on a massive streak to end the season. Explosive offense, very disciplined defense. One offensive line opt out. That's basically it. Oklahoma enters with a very, very talented defense. Pretty much everybody else is playing. I think everybody is playing. Unproven QB, though, and Jackson Arnold. And so, Steven, I'll come to you first. What were your thoughts? What are your thoughts coming into this game now that we are a couple days away from kickoff?
I think it's a good matchup for Oklahoma. It's going to test a lot of what their culture is at this point. Obviously, Arizona's going to come into this game very motivated. Oklahoma's going to come in as probably the more talented team, but with some faults here and there. So I really like the matchup, especially you're looking at the passing game versus OU's defensive backs. It's kind of a strength versus strength matchup there.
Yep.
And we'll see if – I think – was it Cowing might be questionable, or I don't know if he's ever declared something like that, if they ever confirmed whether he's going to play for Arizona. But I think that would be a big miss for Arizona because I think he's a very talented receiver there.
Yeah, and the majority of their offense are their two main receivers that are just like going off. And then on Oklahoma side, like you just mentioned, it's good on good. You have Woody Washington and Gentry, if he can stay healthy. I mean, that dude was like, yeah, I'm healthy. He's wearing like the biggest like buckler and freaking shoulder brace I've ever seen in my damn life. Like it belongs in a fucking car,
Forrest Gump's tire. Legs.
Yeah, it's intense. Like, cause he's like, yeah, I feel great. I was like, what's that on your arm, dude? That's an extra shoulder pad. They made an extra shoulder pad for your shoulder pad. Trevor, what were your thoughts, and what are your thoughts now, I guess, going into this game, especially knowing that Arizona is favored by 3 points?
You know, defensively, you have to feel pretty good about giving Brent Venables a month to prepare and getting a healthy defense back. You know, everybody kind of wondered towards the end of the year when you started to see some gaffes that you didn't see pre-Texas, and especially in the Texas game, just some of those kind of lapses in judgment and, you know, missed tackles here and there. And I think it's just like, you know, Brent harps on competitive depth and just attrition just naturally happening to that roster. So a healthy defense and a prepared defense. Brent Venables strikes me as a guy that's going to take this game very seriously, and there's a lot of pride, you know, instilled. So to what Steven said, it's going to test the mettle of their culture, and hopefully, you know, breathes life into the program moving forward. Not that was really a poor way of saying that, but I mean, just continues to springboard where Oklahoma's going. On the flip side, it's not Jackson Arnold that I'm super concerned about, and I guess it's just me drinking the Kool-Aid on how good Jackson Arnold is, but I think the dude can spin the football pretty damn well. I think OU's got weapons on the outside that they can utilize. You know, no opt-outs, you know, from guys like Farouk, and obviously Drake Stoops is going to have to play an impact in this game. To me, the big concern is just making sure that Jackson Arnold isn't running for his life. You know, where things can get hairy for him is it being his first start. You know, I expect Arizona to attack that inexperienced offensive line, that kind of, you know, cobbled together group, and put pressure on a young quarterback to make split second decisions. So if Gavin Sawchuk, who came on great the last three games of the season, if he can overcome and mask some of the deficiencies in that offensive line and keep a really good Arizona interior defensive line in check and not let them pin their ears back and get after Jackson Arnold. I think this is a team that is talented enough to beat a really good Arizona team. And I'm just happy, good for Arizona. And I like what their quote, with the player for, I can't remember who said it, but he said, this is our championship. And I love that mentality of going in that this bowl game matters. It's a big game for that program, into those players. I hope, not to say it's like bulletin board material for OU, but it certainly should motivate this team that, yeah, this game matters. You got to go out and be competitive. You've got to give it your best, because we know that Arizona's going to. And the last thing that you want is to get punched in the mouth from a school that its conference no longer exists.
Well, they're heading into your spot in your conference. And so, like, that's the thing is that Zona, their defense, they are tough up the middle, especially. They're very stout. That is obviously the spot Oklahoma has its weakness. You have McCabe Matower. He's the only interior guy actually playing that's actually played all year. Caden Green, obviously now a Missouri Tiger because of money. And Troy Everett going to be your center. Caleb Schaefer will be your left guard as well. Walter Rouse playing left tackle. Jacob Sexton playing right tackle. And so where their experience is, you have the inexperience or guys that don't have the game logs. Offensively, Arizona, you're looking at up-tempo, spread, and power. You'll see like shotgun double tight end sets just as much as you'll see like four wide receiver sets all crammed into the line of scrimmage. And so they have chunk plays, lots of chunk plays. It's not a mobile quarterback situation. They have a running back in Jonah Coleman, 6.9 nice yards a carry. That's another guy that is going to test OU. But again, like that's where you come back to OU's defense, right? It's like nobody's really sitting. So Oklahoma should be able to take care of it. It's, can they go out and score? And, well, Vegas expects it to be a high-scoring game. I expect it to be a high-scoring game. I'm really curious to see what happens. And so, like, you know, we can look at you can look at the actual depth chart and stuff like that. But before we talk about the depth chart, I mean, because, like, the defense, don't worry about it. Everybody's pretty much accounted for. We'll be looking at the offense. But before that, did you guys happen to catch the presser today with the coaches, the assistant coaches, because Brent is tomorrow, Wednesday. Did you guys catch the presser with the assistant coaches and some of the players?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if I caught the entire thing.
What'd you think?
Most of it. It's kind of what I thought. I mean, they're not going to change the system too much here and there, but
yeah,
I think some of that's also a little bit of coach speak. I think that they're going to throw their own wrinkles into this game because they're going to need to find ways to move the ball.
Yeah, Bob was alluding to it like on multiple radio shows.
Like I understand with Jackson Arnold and Lebby, like Jackson Arnold ran that offense pretty much all the way through high school. So it's fairly familiar to him. They're not going to change that much, but I expect them to add wrinkles here and there to get this offense kind of going and catch Arizona off guard.
What are you talking about? Like, are you talking about like trick plays and stuff like that? Or are you talking about jet sweeps?
Hopefully it's not jet sweep, but you know, maybe you mix in some air raid concepts and stuff like that, sure, rather than just doing the Lebby offense, because everybody has seen that at this point. So I expect them to kind of mix it up just a little bit, but not too much, because obviously you haven't been able to install a lot.
Yeah, I mean, in these practices are some of the biggest ones of the year going into the bowl game, the winter practices and the winter growth that you see out of players, especially out of the young players that you want to see that. And I totally agree. I mean, Latrell did mention, he's like, hey, I learned the playbook just as Jackson Arnold did. And those guys got to know a lot of each other. But like you said, Arnold kind of already ran this sort of offense before, so it makes it easier for him to read when he's put in a difficult position, like Trevor mentioned earlier, especially in the interior. That's going to be an issue, I think. And so, Trevor, your thoughts. Did you catch any of the presser from what Latrell said or what Joe John even mentioned? Because Brent Venable said Joe John turned down offensive coordinator jobs to stay co-OC at OU.
Yeah, that's kind of like what my takeaway was. Not so much on the X's and O's of this football game, because like what Steven said, it was a lot of coach speak, and good luck deciphering all that. You know, the things that stand out is, you know, from a culture standpoint, Brent Venables has built himself a very Oklahoma is great. Oklahoma is, you know, it is heaven for some of these guys. And you hope that translates you know, to your players as well, to instill that philosophy that there's pride in wearing the crimson and cream. And so, you know, when you hear, you know, Seth Luttrell basically say, I've been waiting 23 years to get back here. I've been working 23 years to get back to this place. Yeah. It kind of makes you wonder, like,
I love here. My dad played here.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's very through and through. It makes you kind of wonder, like, was Seth Luttrell trying to, like, you know, work his way, you know, through North Texas and Atlanta, you know, is his aspirations head coach at the University of Oklahoma someday. And that's a fascinating thing to kind of look at is, you know, this is a guy that clearly loves the program and, you know, that hopefully tells you that he's going to give it all to, you know, put blood, sweat, and tears into building, you know, an elite offense to kind of make his mark on the game. In terms of, you know, the game itself, I'm curious to see like how different the offense is and how many wrinkles they kind of put in. They're going to have to figure out ways to move the ball. Like Steven said, to me, the thing that stands out is how much do they run Jackson Arnold? You know, they really liked to run Dylan Gabriel, but we didn't see it a year ago because you didn't have a backup quarterback and now you've got your future. You know, do you show that off in this bowl game? Sure. Does Jackson Arnold take it upon himself? I'm curious to see like how much that is of the game plan, especially with a patchwork offensive line. OU's going to have to get creative and some of those, you know, spontaneous big plays like what you saw with, you know, guys like Kyler Murray and Caleb Williams in the past. You know, they bailed Lincoln Riley out, you know, quite a few times. And you kind of wonder how much freedom does Jackson Arnold have to try to go win this football game? And does he try to do so with his legs? Does that add another phase to the game that OU wants to utilize?
Sure. I agree. And looking at the depth chart, I mean, specifically on because the defensive side, no surprises. I mean, everybody's there. Everybody's playing. Not a big deal. Offensively, again, you don't have Dylan Gabriel. Your running backs are pretty much the same. I like the ors. You have Sawchuk or Walker or Barnes, which is fun. Tight ends haven't changed. Nick Anderson's still there. Jaden Gibson's still there. Elway Bunkie Shelton actually just entered his name in the portal. Then you actually get to the offensive line. That's where it gets hairy because you see Drake in the slot, Gavin Freeman in the SWAT, Jaleel Farouk out there out wide, Brennan Thompson. So all those guys are still there. Jacob Sexton at right tackle, McCabe Tower. You have a right guard, left tackle, Walter Rouse. Then you hit Schaefer, Troy Everett, and even the guys behind them at left guard, Heath Azeda, true freshman, against that Arizona front. And then Josh Bates is pretty much everywhere across this board. I mean, that, I don't know. With that said, Steven, I'm coming to you with this one. What are your X factors in this game? What are some major things that will decide ultimately, I suppose, what this game turns out to be? Because Vegas expects over 60 points to be scored, most likely.
I think the offensive line is an obvious one there. It's kind of a patchwork at this point, but fortunately, a lot of these guys have played football this season outside of Troy Everett. So I think the other thing that benefits Oklahoma is the middle of that Arizona defensive line isn't really their strength. All of their pass rush and all the pressure comes from the outside. So at least they're not like, you know, it's not strength, there's weakness per se. Like I trust Oklahoma's tackles to handle Arizona's defensive ends and edge players. So I think that's a silver lining. The other thing, I mean, maybe if you get Stogner involved, I doubt it, but we've seen glimpses of him, you know, catching 3-4 balls a game. Is this like kind of his, you know, send away game where he makes a heroic moment? I'm not sure, but I'm sure, you know, coverages are going to be there on the outside with Farouk and Anderson and guys like that. Mm-hmm. And then Stogner's going to have a majority one-on-ones.
Yeah. Trevor, what are your X factors?
That Oklahoma, who did this very, very well early in the year, and it's interesting to see. I don't know. I don't know how they do it with a team that likes to go, you know, so much sideline to sideline and run, you know, run a lot of screens like Arizona does. But to me, it's on the defensive side of the ball, which I feel a lot better about. You know, if Oklahoma wants to win this game, it's to me being opportunistic. It is creating, you know, turnovers and you know, pinning, you know, not letting Arizona have long sustainable drives, play the field position game. I don't want to put like your hope on like, you know, OU is going to need two or three turnovers to win this game. I think if Oklahoma can create a couple of those moments, keep the ball out of Arizona's hands, you know, give your offense that is going to be a bit of a work in process, a progress, extra opportunities, to go out and have a chance to be successful. You know, I'd really like to see that. So but that's more of like a philosophy, you know, phase of the game. You know, Oklahoma's got to be very good on special teams. They're going to have to, they're going to have good to luck. Make, you know,
yeah,
exactly. You know, they're going to have to make, you know, a tough field goal. You know, I expect this is a really interesting matchup.
Hey, like I think conditions are perfect. There's no weather. Like it's an indoor facility.
Yeah, but where are the lights positioned? And are they going to be like in your eyes? And I'm being very sarcastic, folks. If anybody is wondering that, so I don't know. Like it's those little things like that kind of go unnoticed. But if you know, if you're able to pin Arizona deep, you know, win the field position game, not have, you know, OU can't afford to start every drive. You know, from their 10-yard line, with the problems, the issues that we know that this offense is facing on the offensive line, you have to be able in a position to be aggressive on one side of the field. In terms of like players that could maybe make the difference, yeah, I'm curious to see, does Austin Stogner get his swan song? I would love to see that. I pre-injury Austin Stogner, like he did some really nice things. He made some, you know, big catches in that Bedlam game a couple years ago before Lincoln Riley threw double birds up to everybody. He's even made some big plays this year. So like he's potentially a forgotten about matchup. like, and I don't mean that as a slight, but he's one of those guys that can hopefully, you know, fly under the radar. And then, you know, my X factor, just in terms of singular player, is Drake Stoops is going to have a big day. I don't say like has to have, that was probably the wrong way to put it, but Drake Stoops can make the tough plays. And if he's able to become just a thorn in the side for that Arizona defense, I could see him, you know, causing some problems and opening up the playbook a little more.
Looking at mine, like, because I think Drake Stoops is a big part of it. And like Steven mentioned, there's a lot of other things that go into it too. Like obviously the trenches, obviously turnovers are going to be a big deal here too, especially for this Oklahoma team, if we're being quite honest. Obviously defensive pressure, because that's something that they kind of struggled with in the Big 12 at times. Again, I don't know how much I should be valuing Arizona because they did play in the Pac-12. Yes, I know Jed Fish is a good coach and he's turned around that program, but the Pac-12, I don't feel like is a great conference by any means. I don't think it's a really strong conference really outside of Washington, the Big 12? Or Oregon. I mean, I think the Big 12 possibly has the better team or the most depth in it.
I would say the Big 12 is more talented.
Yeah.
I'd agree. Yeah, sure.
And so I don't know. Like I know that Arizona's running off all these things. So obviously getting defensive pressure because their quarterback is not a scrambler. So Oklahoma needs to get pressure or he will just pick them apart. Drake Stoops, yeah, sure. But also just complimentary wide receivers in general. I mean, Drake this defense is really disciplined. They keep everything in front of them. And so that means like a lot of swing passes or stretch plays or maybe your occasional bomb downfield. And that's kind of like my next thing, which is you have to let Jackson Arnold play Jackson Arnold. That you have to let him play the way he wants to play. You can't have any handcuffs on him. You can't have anything extra there just for safety. You have to let him play his game and let him do his game. And so, like, that means intermediate routes are a must. That was something that made this team really successful down the stretch of the season, if we're being quite honest. Drake Stoops has to play a role, but so is Julio Farouk in the intermediate routes and the slant routes. Right. And then you also have Nick Anderson and Jaden Gibson on the outside and Brennan Thompson coming on hot, too. And also, so Austin Stogner, for me, like, out of sight, out of mind. That's kind of how I'm viewing it. But with the wide receivers, because you have great wide receiver core. You just got another guy in Purdue. Angel Anthony's coming back next year. If you can get just a couple more guys in the offensive line, you're set to go for a nice kind of little run and first little trip around the SEC. And so you just got to let Jackson Arnold play. That's my main X factor. Everything else, you know, offensive line, yeah, we know there's problems. Running backs, you have lots of them. You like Sawchuk. Defense, that kind of like is just there. It's the same defense you've seen all year. Gentry Williams says he's healthy again. We'll see what happens. But Steven, let's combine the two. How do you ultimately see this game playing out? And give me a score prediction right after.
No pressure.
I think this is going to be a pretty even keel game all the way through, but I mean, I just like Oklahoma's talent. I think they're secretly more motivated than everyone wants to make the storyline. Like, everybody's talking about Arizona.
I agree.
Yeah.
They want to get 10 wins. They want to win a bowl game going into the Big 12. It's like this super big game for them. Oklahoma's returning Billy Bowman and Stutzman, and they're going to play in this game. And those are their two leaders going to the SEC. And this is going to be, as Trevor said, could be a springboard going into the SEC. So this is the final game that they'll play in the Big as a Big 12 member, I guess you could say. I think there's just a lot riding on. I think they're going to want to send a message that this isn't a team that's just going to get pushed over. Like, everyone's expecting them to just turn into Nebraska. And I think everybody kind of wants to set this up. So like for like maybe like a Stutzman. So you got to make your case for the butt kiss watch list next year. And Bowman, you got to make your case for I'm going to blank on the award, but there's just way more motivation for Oklahoma to get this thing going than I think a lot of the national media give it. So score prediction, I think it's me close. I'll go something like, give me 28, give me 31-28 Oklahoma. I think they win by three.
That's fun. I think it's a good point to think about this team kind of springboarding into, heck, even next semester. We have like how many guys that showed up early just to practice with the team for bowl practice, even though they can't even actually play. I think it's a big deal. Trevor, same thing. What do you see realistically happening in score prediction?
I cannot wait, no matter what, to completely overreact to Jackson Arnold's performance, regardless. He is either going to win five Heisman trophies or Oklahoma fans. Yep, we'll be calling for Dylan Gabriel.
Too late to cut the check to Gabriel.
Yeah. Say come back. That's the storyline that I really can't wait to hear. I do think this is an even-keeled matchup from the standpoint of, I think Oklahoma is really damn good defensively. I think they're going to cause problems for Arizona. If it weren't a bowl game and bowl games just weren't, I feel like bowl games tend to err on the side of points being scored. because of course, you know, as much as you give Brent Venables and his defense, you know, a month to prepare, you also give an offensive coordinator, a month to prepare and script things out. God, I don't know. I do think that Oklahoma is the more talented team. If they're, you know, if defensively, if they keep it in front of them, if they make big plays and just frustrate Arizona, I think Oklahoma can win this game pretty comfortably. Even with the patchwork offensive line, OU also has just too many playmakers out on the outside. So to me, it's schematically, what does OU do differently on the offense to mask some of those deficiencies, protecting Jackson Arnold. I will go. I'm going to go OU winning this game, and I will take the under. I'm going to say it is 27 to.
You'll never something. Know. We'll never know.
We'll never know.
I wonder if he'll come back. He's frozen.
What do you think? We'll wait for Trevor to come back. But what do you think about Jaden Gibson in this matchup? Because Arizona's corners are, 6'3", 6'4". Jaden Gibson, 6'5". I mean, that could be kind of an X-factor situation for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question because, like, Oklahoma does have such height at those positions where I don't think Arizona has a ton of length at defensive back. I don't think they have a ton of length at all at defensive back. And Trevor's wondering what happened. But anyways, I don't think they have a lot of length, and I think that's going to be a big deal too. So that's where I think, yeah, sure, maybe that's where Austin Stogner comes into a play here. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's can Jackson Arnold throw the ball to them? Can he have enough time to actually get the ball off again? And all that jazz. Okay. And so, I mean, I don't think too much of it. I think that Nick Anderson is obviously a baller for a variety of reasons. He's shown us that this entire year, shown us that maybe the Anderson family just, that's all they do is, you know, they go out and perform. And so I think Oklahoma does have a lot of length. Even Jaleel Farouk has a lot of length. The only guy that doesn't is really Drake Stoops. So just thinking about it, I mean, the game, like how I see it playing out, I mean, I think it's an interesting game, right? I mean, and even Ethan Downs mentioned this in the presser. He mentioned that this was a championship or this was a title or something like that. And so you guys both mentioned it earlier in the podcast, like far earlier in the podcast, saying like, hey, this is going to like really show Brent's kind of imprint on the team so far. And so like, are they going to come out and perform? Are they going to be extra ready to perform against an Arizona team in the Alamo Bowl in Texas, so right next door? But there should be some Arizona fans there too, but it should be more OU fans because there are far more OU football fans are than our Arizona football fans. It always comes down to who wants it more. Who wants it more? You can look at it on a piece of paper. So I think it's interesting to bring up, Steven, that you mentioned like, hey, I think Oklahoma might be a little bit more motivated than people are maybe leading on, or at least about how they look on the outside. And I think they are also motivated, especially like look at all the guys that are staying to play, especially even the guys that are leaving. Yes, they're trying to get more game film, sure, like Reggie Pearson and all those folks like that. Yes, like in Rondo Bothroy trying to get more game film out there. But at the same time, I think it shows also like how much people are bought in. And I know Danny Sutzman led the last team practice, in the last team get together. So I thought that was really interesting as well. So my score prediction, I think it'll be very back and forth. I'm taking the over. I'm taking a lot of points being scored just because Oklahoma, I don't think they're going to get to the quarterback as often as they want. I think Oklahoma maybe struggles a couple times on offense as well. And I think Oklahoma maybe turns the ball over a little bit by putting the ball on the ground or something like that, just because it's the interior of the offensive line. If it's the tackles, maybe you wiggle around a little bit, but the interior, you're having to roll the pocket like constantly. And that's not a situation that would be, I don't know, very great for Jackson Arnold and this type of offense that you're kind of running. So I'm actually picking Arizona to win, but a close one, 38-34. But regardless, I could see those scores flipped. I could see Oklahoma winning comfortably. I don't know. You never know during bowl season. That's what makes bowl season fun. I mean, that's what made tonight fun. I mean, UCF is playing, or no, Kansas is playing tonight, right? What's the score? Does anybody know?
Good score update.
And Devin Neal just announced today he's also coming back for another season at Kansas. So I mean, I think he's ruining his draft stock a little bit, for being quite frank, but I think Kansas might try to challenge for the Big 12 championship next year, which is kind of fun to think about in retrospect.
Is Kansas Oklahoma's Big 12 school officially? Are we adopting the Jayhawks?
Nah.
We'll never do that.
I mean,
never.
It's like, for me, like that's Tulane. I like watching Tulane in the American Conference and stuff like that. That's fun for me, right? But I won't root for anybody in the Big 12 especially Texas Tech. I'll never root for Texas Tech. Those fans,
no one in the Hateful Eight.
They're the worst fans. Yeah, like they are so jilted because Oklahoma wanted to take a better deal. I'm sorry you weren't invited to the party. That's not my problem. And Doug Gottlieb cussed at us a couple times on drugs, and that's fine because he was rehabbing from some surgery. So I do not
actually sympathize with Gottlieb now.
Why?
I've had a similar knee problem.
Yeah, but you know,
I thought you were about to tell us that you stole credit cards.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not yet.
I thought it was financially related. Yeah. Steven's
not
working.
Steven's
working the big scheme. It's not small schemes, okay? And I
mean, Doug was doing a podcast, probably had some painkillers running through him. I mean, we can all now relate to that.
I mean, he specifically mentioned he was on painkillers, like to us. So, I mean, it's fine. Doug was a good sport, even though he got upset spaghetti about things.
And he's a criminal.
A little bit about that. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the Latrell hire now that he's officially introduced, right? You know, Joe John, you know, Brent, like I mentioned earlier, Joe John says, Brent Venable says that Joe John turned down other OC opportunities. Of course, Mississippi State probably being one of them, if we're being honest. And just to stay as the co-offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, of course, he basically doubled his salary, going from $500,000 to upwards of $900,000. So kind of makes sense, because he'll probably have bigger opportunities down the road if this SEC experiment works out with him and Brent Venables and other stuff. But Latrell is a play caller. He is the major OC. The dude's been under so many freaking different offensive minds that he kind of mashes up his own version. And so I don't think we'll see a ton of that tomorrow, or not tomorrow, but the next couple of days. But I think we'll see a little bit of it, especially in the nature in which those plays are called. Not necessarily the play calling, if that makes sense. Kind of like, again, Cale Gundy. You're not going off script. You're not diverting too far away from the playbook. You might have entered a couple of extra things, but you may be calling the game at a different pace or different style. Steven, coming to you first on this one, do we like the Latrell hire? Like, do we like it? Is it too much of, again, Oklahoma? And they're hiring in-house again. Would you like them to have more of an extensive search? Was it something that just fit? Was it something that maybe felt like it was decided a couple years ago? What do we think about this, especially heading into this bowl game that will basically, again, like what Trevor mentioned, it's not just going to be the idea of, hey, this is Jackson Arnold moving into the future with fans and their eyes on that. It's also, hey, this is Seth Latrell, and fans are going to overreact one way or another in the offseason as well. And so what do you think about this actual hire? Now he's really introduced and asked a lot of questions about it today on the stand.
I'm intrigued about it. I'm kind of going to refrain judgment, just not even based on this game, because I'm really not worried about the play calling or the style of offense. That will work itself out, and you can make any offense usually work with the right talent. I want to see what Latrell does on the recruiting trail, how he handles NIL, that kind of stuff. Because in today's college football, you can't just be an X's and O's guy. And I think Latrell is a pretty good X's and O's guy. I don't think anyone should worry about that. I want to see how he handles, you know, do I need to recruit my quarterback? Can I get, you know, maybe not the top tier guy, but like the guy I need to run this offense that's going to push us over the edge to compete for championships. Can I get my, let's go like Bill Beedenbaugh. Like, can I help Bill Beedenbaugh recruit? Like, I just don't know what Latrell looks like in that capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, if he elevates the staff to recruit better, you know, I think he's the guy, but we'll see what this 2025 class looks like. I want to see him maybe help. Like, I don't like wide receiver recruiting is great right now, but like tight end recruiting, you look at offensive line recruiting, those are areas where Seth Luttrell maybe needs to step forward and take a bigger role. And I just want to see if he can do that.
He is super Oklahoman, by the way. His accent is like incredible. He's
the one thing I like about him is I think he's the Oklahoma version of what's his name from LSU a while back.
Ed Orgeron?
Yeah, I think he's Oklahoma Ed Orgeron.
I thought about that today a little bit. His neck is as thick as his head. It's incredible. That dude that dude's shoulder shrugs are off to be off the charts.
Textbook 90s fullback.
He's redneck Orgeron.
100%. He's 100% textbook Mike Allstott 90s fullback. And so like Trevor, like what is your thought? What are your thoughts based upon the Luttrell hire? Do you like it? Do you wish there was more of an extensive hire? Because I know fans were like, yes, this makes sense. Yes, welcome him back home. His dad went to OU and played football. He went to OU, played football, was a captain on the national title team. It's funny to look at the opening of that national title game, young Seth Luttrell right there being 20-something years old, and now you see him here. And, you know, he's a Southern boy, that massive, massive, massive Southeast Oklahoma accent. And you're getting him, but he's been under, like I said, a bevy of coaches that with different offensive minds, always spread a little bit more air raid than he is kind of like what's happening right now. But do you wish that is he the guy, or is he a guy that you're intrigued by? Is he a guy that you wish Oklahoma would have spent more time on the coach search and brought in to let Joe John call plays for the bowl game? What are your thoughts on it?
You know, no, I think you had to move on an OC pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, basically as soon as you enter bowl season, you've got to get on the recruiting trail. To me, it's all the optics of timing. I think I said this a couple weeks ago that it's so interesting that if Seth Luttrell doesn't head scratchingly get fired from North Texas, I think it's a slam dunk hire for any school. You know, he's got already a really solid coaching pedigree, you know, coaching under, you know, some of the biggest names in college football. You know, he's got an offensive mind that has adapted, you know, as college football's evolved over the last 20 years. And so when OU pulled the trigger, when they brought him here in the first place, I immediately said, well, you know, there's Oklahoma's next offensive coordinator. Right. And it's again, you look at what Coach Prime did at Colorado, you go yank the head coach at Kent State, who was really, you know, one of the hotter names in college football. You pull him from a group of five mid-major school and you say, hey, come take a role under me. And I'm going to help you out here and you're going to help me out. And everybody was like, that's brilliant. Look at what Coach Prime is doing at Colorado. What a power move. And if Oklahoma does that at North Texas, who is, you know, making bowl game after bowl game after bowl game under Luttrell, I think the optics are a little different. Everybody's like, wow, OU made a really smart, savvy hire here to be able to bring a guy like Seth Luttrell home. Would you know if I had my druthers, you know, of course, like say, like who could OU go get? Of course, there's other names in college football that you could potentially look at. I want Joe Brady, but that's not going to happen. You know, to me, you know, I looked at themes, you know, I kind of threw out jokingly, you know, like, you know, Ken Dorsey's not looking for a job currently. Would he potentially come back? You know, would he come to the college game, or is he, you know, is he going to stay in the
looking
NFL?
For a job, or might be looking for a job?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, OU could have had a more extensive search. You look at, you remember when OU hired Lincoln Riley, how it was Sonny Cumbie or bust.
Yep.
Was pretty much the philosophy. And with TCU coming off of that national, or not national, but the Big 12 championship and, you know, beating the shit out of Ole Miss and the Peach Bowl. And then you go out and you hire a no name from East Carolina, and OU fans were pissed that you're returning Samaje Perine and you finally get Joe Mixon back. And you're like, Bob, what the fuck are you doing? You're going to go get an air raid guy? And you know, hindsight 2020 with how Lincoln left the program, but that was a dynamite hire for as an offensive coordinator. And so I don't know. To what Steven says, I'm curious about Seth as a recruiter more than I am an X's and O's guy. I think, you know, offensively, he's going to be – I think he's a pretty damn sound football mind. I think that, you know, schematically you're going to see something familiar. I think it's a good fit. I think it's a natural fit. You know, Brett Venables has made some pretty good high. Shit, Jeff Lebby was a really hot name, and everybody wanted him. You know, a lot of people were really saying, go get Jeff Lebby, go get Jeff Lebby. What a home run hire. And then OU fans, and rightfully so, said, get this guy out of Norman as quickly as possible. So I don't know. The offensive coordinator is like the defense of the dark arts teacher at Hogwarts. And that might be the nerdiest thing that I'll ever say in this podcast, that it's an impossible job.
They don't last long.
Either you're good enough, or you're going to, sometimes they're evil. You're going to get hired somewhere else. Or you're the scapegoat and off you go. And that's the nature of the job. So, I don't have any problems with Seth Luttrell. I guess I could surmise it.
Yeah. And it feels like you mentioned, once he was named like an analyst, people were like, yeah, that seems like a guy that's definitely going to be a offensive coordinator in the SEC at some point. And so, moving along, it was just Christmas. If you could give a gift to anybody, like an ability to any player on this team, Trevor, what gift would you give? Like, for example, you could give more awareness to a left tackle or something like that. What gift, physical or non-physical or mental or whatever, what gift would you give to a player or maybe a coach? You know, it's this team. It's not specific.
It's funny that you mentioned left tackle. If I could gift something to somebody, it would be probably, I don't know, what do you say, like, is it experience? Do you give him, get like a guy like Jacob Sexton, you know what do you got to do to get Jacob Sexton to that next level, especially, you know, going into the bowl game? I would give him, I don't know, speed. make him
work like a little faster. A jet sweep.
Yeah, 100%.
Jet sweep. Overload the left side of the line to make him the extra puller.
Give him like, I guess, like clear, like vision. Get, you know, and I think that comes with like what you see with an experienced guy. Give him the vision of somebody who's been playing high level college football, or, you know, spending time in the league. Give him the vision of somebody, you know, somebody with way more experience than what he brings to the table currently.
I would agree with that. Somebody like, I don't know, that's somebody that's going to get drafted one day.
Lane Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Steven, same question. What's a gift you would want to give to a player?
I've got two players in mind. Okay. One's in the portal, but he's going to play. I would give Tawee Walker some explosiveness and just make him into the most elite player of all time.
Make him a bowling ball.
Make him just the fastest bowling ball of all time.
It's like a miniature Samaje?
Like a smaller Samaje, but with Rodney Anderson speed.
Oh, that's fun.
Breakaway
speed. That'd be a lot of fun.
I mean, gosh, he'd break people's kneecaps in half.
Kip Bend Lewis. The other way.
Be like that scene in The Patriot with the cannonball.
Yeah.
I go Kip Lewis as well.
Okay.
But I would make him like 6'3".
Yeah, I agree. He's what is he like, 6 foot, just straight flat?
He's might be pushing 6'1".
With cleats on?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and I like that one. Like Kip, like the only thing with him is that he's not like those 6'2", 6'3" linebackers. I mean, it's funny to look at Danny Stutzman when he's standing next to Brian Bosworth, because people think Bos is so big and Danny just kind of like towers over him, which is just kind of absurd to think about. But you know, of course, Bos is, you know, big width wise, but you know, he's an actor now, so whatever. But my gift is to Desaun McCullough. It's simply just better feet, better vision. So he can play in coverage, so he can be on the field at all times and not have to and be that legitimate cheetah and not have to be that, hey, it's a running down, it's first down, it's second down cheetah. All right, now we'll bring in Peyton Bowen. Now we'll bring in Kendall Dolby. Now we'll bring in somebody else to be the third down passing cheetah. That would be my gift, is better feet, better vision, and honestly just like better IQ as far as spatial awareness where you're supposed to be at, because there were a couple games where, man, it looked nasty because it went hurry up while he was on the field. It kept on passing the ball on him, and it was not a fun experience. And so that's where, you know, they need to coach him up to do a fake injury just like everybody else did to OU. And so
I do one more gift.
Yeah.
This is the season of giving. This is a team-wide gift. Coaches, okay, maybe not as much.
Okay.
And I think this gift might already be there. It should be there by tomorrow night. A few bottles of Hennessy before the bowl game.
Oh, yeah.
We know OU plays way better on the Henny.
Favor of Zach Sanchez and Aaron Colvin, maybe.
I bet he donated. They donated a couple bottles.
Not Bob's tequila still. Jury's still out.
It wasn't my favorite, I'll be honest. Sorry, Bob. It just wasn't. The mango was good, but the silver, like triple distilled silver, was not the best.
You know, it happens. It happens to the best of us. You know, we try things, and you know,
not even taste, better than most.
Taste buds. Oh, that, you know, that's a shame. That's not even a 10-win season. That's like an 8-win season. You know, that's, well, can't win them all, I guess. But New Year's resolutions, everybody has them to some degree or something like that. What is a New Year's resolution for next year's 2024-25 Oklahoma Sooners football team for you? What is a New Year's resolution for them going into the opposite side of winter, into spring, into summer, then obviously into the fall, into football season?
For somebody to give Brent Venables a get back coach. And I don't think you're going to see him get flagged in the SEC, like, you know, what happened this year.
I agree.
The dude's gotta cool it there. And then to me also, somebody put a clock in front of Brent's face at all times, so he can understand when to call timeouts, like clock management. That's like, yeah. And then when I look at like coaching mistakes, that really, really stand out to me this past year, and where Brent didn't take a big leap from where he was in his first season. You know, I want to see better game management from the coaches. And so whether that's better understanding like the ebbs and flows and you know, figuring out when to hurry up, when to slow it down. And I know that falls a lot on the OC, but also like, dude, you have timeouts, use them. You know, what is this urgent, like this miracle belief that, oh yeah, we're going to get a stop here and we're going to get the ball back, but we're going to have 33 seconds to go, you know, 70 yards.
Sure.
Like just use them. Yeah. To me, yeah. Somebody help Brent out a little bit there. And then I guess the other New Year's resolution is make special teams a big ass priority next year. OE's got to improve on special teams.
Yeah. They are not very special in my heart right now. And it is a season of giving. So That's very true. Steven, what is the New Year's resolution for you for this team?
Develop a pass rush. I think that's one of the most important things outside of special teams that this team lacked this season, was just a consistent pass rush, both up the middle and on the edges. So I think they have the talent to do so. DeJon Terry kind of looks like he could be a guy for them. And then you have PJ Adebare coming in, mm-hmm. a lot of talented true freshmen behind him. So, or PJ Adebare in his second season. So
yeah.
I think some of the pieces are there, not all the pieces. It's managed expectations a little bit, but I think they could definitely do better heading into the SEC.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, like, you have PJ Adebare, you have, R. Mason Thomas, who they really, really like, that he just got dinged before the season started. Like you mentioned, DeJon Terry, Grayson Halton, Ashton Sanders. Who else on the defensive line is coming back?
Lacey's coming back.
Lacey's coming back. Ethan Downs, obviously. And of course, you know, you also have, I don't know, I don't think Taylor Wine's a guy that's going to be playing next year. I think it's obviously a guy you maybe, hopefully, a portal in. Who knows? But you got a bunch of guys. You got a bunch of dudes. You're playing multiple. And so, my New Year's resolution for them is just like, for the offensive line, the defensive line, just somehow secure like an NIL deal with like Qdoba, to where they just get free Qdoba and they can just like take online classes in the fall specifically and just sit at Qdoba all day and just pack on protein and weight that they will sincerely need for Alabama 340-pound defensive linemen and Georgia 330-pound offensive linemen. So that's one of my New Year's resolutions, besides them just like working with Schmitty, getting bigger, faster, stronger, because I mean, like, that's like the Jerry Schmidt is like one of the most pivotal coaches at Oklahoma. Like, yes, your offensive coordinator, your position coaches, all those other coaches and personnel, they put you in places for success. But you spend the majority of your year with your strength and conditioning coach. He knows you best, and he knows your limits the best. Like, he knows the difference between you being injured or you being hurt. There's a difference between injured and being hurt. And I'm sure that's also something that's also being chimed about. And so, like, again, Steven mentioned this a couple years ago. Typically takes 3 years for a full strength conditioning coach's cycle to actually start showing up. And so hopefully that is something that continues to be a trend, or something that hopefully that continues to be a little bit of more of an oomph going into the SEC, which is something that Oklahoma thankfully had these winter practices, despite the fact that you wish they had another maybe week of practice, because of those elongated practice means you have more growth. They see a lot of growth, especially the young guys in this part of winter during the bowl season. But anyways, that's all I've got for, you know, my news resolutions. But is there anything else you guys have before we get off here?
The portal. There might be some portal action come, I don't know what the day is, January 1st, January 2nd.
Is that good or bad news?
It could be good news. It won't be bad news.
Okay.
But it could be great news.
I need our listeners to let me know. So I'm making the drive to El Paso tomorrow. So I'm going to go to the Sun Bowl. And I need to know from our listeners who my rooting interest needs to be. I have a feeling, as an Oklahoma fan base podcast, I'm going to be instructed not to root for Notre Dame. But some part of me just wants to, I was treated so well in South Bend. I didn't pay for a single beer, my entire trip up there. And
they have
so,
plenty. They have plenty.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited to see, this will be the third time that I've got to see Notre Dame play in person in my life. And so really, really excited there. And I don't know if I could bring myself to, wear any kind of orange, with Oregon State. But that being said, I love, a beaver as a mascot. is truly outstanding. Yeah, if somebody could give me some advice on who I should be pulling for in that game, I think it's gonna be a really damn good game, and I think Marcus Freeman it might be in deep shit up in South Bend.
Just do the whole Rob Lowe situation and wear an NCAA
yeah.
a black jacket, NCAA hat, just, you know, logo on a hat, and just enjoy football, you know?
Just fit right in. And unapologetically, the Sun Bowl is my favorite stadium in El Paso. It's tucked right in the mountains. It's really, really cool. It's a great event. I have family ties to Sun Bowl. That's not randomly packing up my bags and driving to El Paso to go see a round of college football game. very, very excited to make the trip down there.
Fond memories of the Sun Bowl with Landry Jones being a freshman and Ryan Broyles and Rhino
Lewis. Went to that game.
Just killing people on kickoffs, which was always fun to hear because Toby Gerhart was like
Gerhart played. Yeah. But Andrew Luck didn't play.
Andrew Luck didn't play. Gerhart was the America's sweetheart that didn't win the Heisman, didn't last long in the NFL. And then Oklahoma ended up winning that game, which was really nice ending to that season. But, Steven, anything left for you to say? But, you know, we got New Year's heading up and we're not going to podcast till after.
Join the Discord. It's free. I'm talking about recruiting, talking about portaling, we're talking about football. A Thunder thread's going there, so that's good. But,
they won tonight too. They beat Rudy Gobert, who I hate. Yeah.
I ended up voting yes, by the way, on the stadium.
70-30%. Kind of nuts.
I mean, I knew it was going to pass.
Sports state.
But I left the doctor's office and I was just like, better go vote because it's right there. I just voted yes because even though the logo sucks, I just need a logo to bitch about.
And most importantly, Steven hates poor people. And that's what the important thing to take away is that. If you vote yes for the arena, you hate poor people.
Yeah, that's it. That's great. It's a great assumption.
But join the Discord so you can listen to me bitch about it.
It's true. I agree. And like, there's like random. Like, I stumbled upon like a random cooking channel in the Discord, which is always fun. And then that Discord is, I swear to God, the Discord is gonna be even more on fire when this summer. NCAA 25 comes out on the newest consoles, so that'll be a fun kind of situation where I imagine a lot of people will probably link up and create online dynasties before they get angry at each other and quit multiple times. So that'll be a good time. But anyways, guys, thank you for listening. We're gonna push this podcast out obviously tonight, so it is a Tuesday night at 9:30. Because the game is Thursday again, Oklahoma versus Arizona. Never forget, never always remember the Alamo, all that fun stuff. Yeah, it's a good time. Should be a good bowl game. One of the most highly, I guess, anticipated ones outside of the obviously New Year's Six bowls, because this is a seemingly evenly matched kind of like bowl game. Is kind of fun to think about. So, and also you have two freshman phenom quarterbacks, one that's proven himself, one that is behind the scenes is living up to the hype. So we'll see what happens, but the next time, y'all, see you guys later.